You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up? This is the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesey. You can find me on Twitter at ConnorNFLDraft. I'm here with my two co-hosts tonight, Dalton Miller and Cole Patterson. You can find those guys on Twitter at Dalton B. Miller and at Cole L. Patterson. What's up tonight, guys?
What's up, man? How are y'all?
I'm doing so good. And it was either I was going to be doing so good on this podcast or I was going to be doing just absolutely miserable. So,
exactly.
Dalton, you with us?
I am with us.
How are you doing?
I am currently trying to figure out whether I have to leave Pennsylvania early, because apparently the Northeast, in all of its hatred for me and everything that I do, is supposed to snow this weekend when the wife and I are supposed to drive back to Dallas. So, screwing up our plans. We're supposed to go to see my uncle play at a bar. He's in a bluegrass band, and I was going to watch the game there. And Well, now we might be leaving on Friday to go back to Dallas on Saturday.
There's nothing less fun than when I leave Texas. It's 75 degrees, sunny. I'm driving limes around downtown Dallas, just having the time of my life. And then I get back to Baltimore yesterday, and it's like 22 degrees and raining and just disgusting. And I was like, this sucks.
And the worst part about this entire thing is I can't find anywhere online a national forecast for the weekend. Can't find it.
Why don't you just Weather Channel Pennsylvania, or where you're at in Pennsylvania?
Well, I Weather Channel where I'm at in Pennsylvania, but I got the weather for that. It's the weather that's going on underneath of us that I really care about.
Yeah, you're getting. I told you
where
bro.
I'm driving. Where I'm driving.
How do you get?
I'm not driving through you.
What do you drive? What do you go through, like West Virginia?
I drive through Harrisonburg.
Oh yeah, you're right in past JMU. Yeah, I mean, look, after the podcast, I'll look it up for you and let you know. You know.
What... Oh, I'm looking it up right now.
Oh,
I'm figuring this out.
Dalton's got it figured out, but we got it figured out too, because the Cowboys defeated the Seattle Seahawks 24-22 in the wild card round of the playoffs, and that's the first time we can say that. They've had, what, 3 playoff wins in the last 22 years, I think is the stat I heard today. And it's just, we don't get to talk about this. No one's been able to talk about this much. So being able to sit down here tonight with you guys and talk about a playoff victory has not been something a lot of people have had the chance to do in Cowboys Nation. So we're lucky, and we need to talk about the game. We need to talk about what we liked, what we need to see them improve on a little bit. In order to maybe advance a little bit further. They obviously take on the Rams this Saturday night in Los Angeles. That's going to be a huge, huge game for the divisional NFC divisional round. Cowboys have an opportunity to win a game, play in the NFC East Championship. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but again, that's also something we haven't been able to say much in a long time. So there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Cowboys fan, and we're here to break it down for you tonight. Cole, I'm going to start with you, man. You watched the game. You tweeted from the Blogging the Boys account. What did you see that you liked?
Man, there's a lot I did like. What I point to at first is the first two drives, specifically the offensive and defensive drives to start the game. I know the first drive ended in 3 points on offense, but it kind of just showed that this team was going to be able to drive the field, be able to move the ball in the Seahawks defense, which is, I mean, it's not a vintage LOB defense, but they are a good defense that especially up front with Frank Clark and a company that makes life hard on offensive lines and the quarterback. And up until that start at the end, it looked like they could drive down the field. I kind of think that set the tone for the game. And on the defensive side of the ball, they forced Russell Wilson to go three and out. And I remember that one play specifically, Jalen Smith showing his range, just spying Russell Wilson going to the left. And then Russell Wilson scrambles, tries to find an open receiver to the right, and Jalen Smith's right there and deflects the ball and forces the Seahawks to punt. I kind of think that just set the tone, especially defensively, for the rest of the game. And it kind of showed that this team wants to win. This team's talented enough to win, and they were going to show the Seahawks that this is not the same team that they were back in September.
Dalton, I know you watched the game as well, and the great, I say great with quotation marks around of it, Pennsylvania. No offense to you and your family, but
none taken.
What did you see that you liked in that game? You know, obviously, you know, Cole covered a lot of the things that they did well in defense, offense. But we can, you know, there's four quarters of football on each side of the ball. There's a lot we can take away from this game positively. What were some things that you liked that you saw?
I liked that I didn't have a heart attack during the game. See, listen, I'm one of the most level-headed, calm individuals, you know, as a sports fan that there is. I really am. And I sat down during halftime for 5 minutes, and that was it. I was pacing around the entire time. I was yelling at my TV like an idiot. I did say that I could call plays better than Scott Linehan while it was going on. I felt like neither offensive coordinator wanted to win the football game. The Cowboys just got lucky and were able to run the ball, and the Seattle Seahawks were unable to run the football. And that was kind of the deciding factor in the game. I mean, the Cowboys gave up six plays of 20-plus yards through the air. You know, Russell Wilson did what he does. He's extremely accurate. That throw on fourth down was ridiculous. Randy Gregory may have been held on the play. I haven't seen the All-22 yet. I haven't seen the All-22 yet because I've been watching Dwayne Haskins for the past, you know, like, 24 hours. But I'm really interested to get into that and then get into the Rams, but I really felt like the Cowboys just kind of wanted it more. I felt early in the game the crowd kind of had them going, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about a little bit. I mean, you being there, I wanted to hear what the atmosphere was like, because I've been to games there, and it's not what I would say, you know, a good home field advantage.
Yeah, and I'll touch on that because I think it's interesting because the games I've gone to, you know, I try to go to a game every year in Texas. You know, I've been to a few games a few years. It does, like you said, it never seems to be primary Cowboys fans and primary Cowboys fans on third down or when you need the home field advantage to kick in. You never really got that. I remember when I went to the Packers playoff game 2 years ago in 2016. It was loud. But there's a ton of Packers fans there as well because Packers fans travel well. You know, it was probably 70-30 Cowboys fans to Packers fan. But this game, it was different. There was, I'd still say it was probably 85-15 Cowboys Seahawks fans. So it was extremely, extremely loud when Seattle had the ball. Obviously, it was always louder on third down and fourth down. You know, everyone got more into it. But for the most part, it was loud when Seattle had the ball. And, you know, thanks to a lot of the fans who had paid attention to who knew that, okay, let's quiet everybody down. You know, they did do a good job of being quiet when Dallas had the ball. And I think, you know, it showed, you know, I would have hoped to have seen a delay a game or a false start from Seattle. You didn't really get that. And I think it's just because the way that stadium is, that noise doesn't just hit the field as hard as other stadiums do. But it was great, you know, the atmosphere around the stadium, around, you know, Texas Live at the Star. You know, it just doesn't get much better than that as a Cowboys fan. The thing that I want to ask you guys, because you guys live in Texas, am I the only one that's just extremely disappointed in Dallas itself? It's just like people rocking Cowboys gear around town. Like, I saw more Giants gear. I saw more, you know, obviously North Dakota State and Eastern Washington was playing in the FCS championship there. So there was a ton of North Dakota State and Eastern Washington fans, but you rarely saw Cowboys fans outside of AT&T Stadium, outside of the Star, just walking around town and stuff. You didn't see a lot of that. Is that normally how it is?
So Cole's obviously lived there a lot longer than I have. At least where I live, it's trying to figure out a way to talk about this without hurting anybody's feelings. It's bougie. We'll say that. It's Dallas is a very bougie city. There's a lot of first of all, there is a lot of transplants. Not everybody that lives in Dallas, actually most people that I speak to, are not from Dallas. But that's part of why you don't see a ton of Cowboys stuff. And then, like I said, it's, an affluent area, at least, you know, in the downtown area, up north where, you know, kind of where Cole's from in Plano, and, you know, areas up there. So you're not going to see it as much. Because you don't get those, not psychotic, but you don't get the wild and crazy fans usually in high-income areas. That's not where they come from. So that's my take on it. But I think that kind of changes when they win a couple playoff games.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's not – Dallas definitely is far from, like, Green Bay or a college town or anything like that. There's a lot more fans from different cities. As Dalton kind of mentioned, there's a lot of people moving in to the Dallas Metroplex and the surrounding cities. So I do kind of agree. It is kind of disappointing in the fact that there's not as many Cowboys fans as you would like, especially if you're coming down for a game. But I believe if the Cowboys can knock off the Rams, then you'll see more. I guess you can kind of call Dallas kind of a bandwagon or fair weather city. But there are a lot of Cowboys fans. It's just not like, I don't know, there's like the Highland Park area, for example. You're probably not going to see too many people decked out in Ezekiel or Dak Prescott jerseys or Cowboys merchandise for whatever reason. But if you go to like Frisco or the Plano area, kind of where the Star is, you'll see a little bit more, but yeah, it's definitely not a college town.
Yeah, I hate to give like a trip review, but we got there on Thursday. We went to Marshall's Barbecue, great little barbecue spot. You know, it's great. And we were talking to the guy who was working there. We kind of got there right before they closed, and he was talking to us, and he was like, you guys going to the game? And we were like, yeah. He was like, yeah, because, you know, you never see people in the town wearing Cowboys gear. And I was like, really? Like, I mean, I've been to Dallas, and I guess I just never really recognized it. But mm-hmm. He was right, because we literally went all over the place. We went to the Star. We went to AT&T. We went to Nick and Sam. You know, obviously, they're not going to be wearing that stuff in those places. But just in that part of town, I expected to see somebody walking down the street with a hat on or a jacket or a jersey. And I might have seen outside of the stadium, the Star, 5 Cowboys jerseys that weekend. And I was just like, that guy was right. Like, at the end of their trip, I looked at my friend. I was like, remember when we were in the barbecue spot and he was just dissing on Cowboys fans because they don't rep? I was like, he was right. Like, you just don't see it. And I don't know. It just, like, the Cowboys are so big. Like, you expected to see, like, mm-hmm. I just expected to see, you know, being a wild card game, a playoff game, you just expect, I guess I expected to see billboards and, you know, banners and all that. And you just didn't see it. And I don't know if it's, that's why I was curious to ask you guys if it's just, you know, if it's maybe like, you know, they're just not on board with it yet or what. But, all right, let's get into this game. We just spent so much time just talking about the town of Dallas. So let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys themselves. I'm going to get, you know, Dalton, you talked a little bit about what you liked. Colt, you talked a little bit about what you liked. You know, one thing that I liked, and if you follow me on Twitter, if you follow this podcast, you know I am a supporter of Dak Prescott. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he, you know, can be a really, really good quarterback. I don't think he's ever going to be a top 5 in the league, but I think he does have the intangibles. He does have some of those tools to be hopefully one day a top, you know, 10, maybe even 8 quarterback. Not saying that's where he is now. I think he has the potential to get there. And I thought that this game, he played one of his better games as a whole game. Obviously, he had the interception that we can argue about that. If And I don't think that was a great throw from him, but it was 1,000% the definition of defensive pass interference. Mm-hmm. Noah Brown got mugged. It's a tip ball. We've seen that happen so many times with him. But he was 22 for 33, passing touchdown, the interception, and a rushing touchdown. The plays he made with his legs, you could say very well, won the game for the Cowboys. And I think that in itself goes a long ways. A lot of people want to diminish the quarterback running thing that happens in the NFL today. They don't think it matters. I think it matters a lot if you can do it effectively and if you can do it in the right circumstances. For instance, 3rd and 14. 3rd and 14 for the Cowboys has not been an easy success rate this year. Third down's gotten better since Amari Cooper came on, but you don't see a lot of teams just convert 3rd and 14, especially when it comes off of a QB power run that was a draw, pretty much a quarterback draw, out of shotgun. He went back. He got 14 yards. He needed 14 yards. He got about 17 or 18. He looked like he was going to be stopped 6 yards short. Somehow he made Bobby Wagner look like he had never played football before, which doesn't happen. That was his first missed tackle of the year, according to multiple people who watch that and record that. And I just don't think you can diminish that. I think that stuff goes so long, such a far way in seeing, viewing, and analyzing the way he plays the game. And again, I think throughout that whole game, and I watched every game this weekend, except the Indy and Houston game, and I watched some of that off and on at Texas Live. But there was not a lot of good quarterback play this weekend when you look at every quarterback that played, and I think that he was up at the top of the list, and I think that's a good sign for things to come in the playoffs and possibly for the future. I wanted to finish, before we take our first break, I wanted to talk about his play a little bit. So I'll start it off with Dalton. I know you've not necessarily been critical, but you've kind of not really.
Well, no, I think that's a good way to describe it. I've been critical of Dak Prescott, but I definitely don't dislike Dak Prescott.
Yeah, that's probably kind of what I was
thinking.
You don't hate him, but you don't think, you're not for sure that he's, the next coming of, Tony Romo or whatever. You're not positive that he's the future of the Cowboys.
No, I mean, I think he's, I know for a fact he's the future of the Cowboys. He will be the Dallas Cowboys quarterback for the next however many years. We know what we have with him. He is gutsy as hell. And that was completely obvious on that 3rd and 14 that he had absolutely zero business converting. The pirouette through the air was hilarious and poetic. His abilities throughout that game, when you need him, were great. I mean, he missed a couple throws, but I wasn't upset with what I saw from the live viewing. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to get to the All-22 yet. It's kind of the beatdown of running a website, but I liked what I saw live, and I like the way that he has played in recent weeks, period. And then he comes in and they win this game. The team scores more points than literally any other team in the first round of the playoffs at 24, and I'm excited about this week now, because when you have literally 8 teams and none of them scored over 24 points in the first round, it just shows that things are a little bit different in the playoffs. And for a somewhat floundering offense in LA, Cowboys fans, in my opinion, should feel good about Saturday night. And part of that is because of Dak Prescott. And we know the record when Dak doesn't turn the ball over. He shouldn't have turned the ball over in this game, because that interception shouldn't have been an interception. So I really don't have anything to bicker about right now.
Yeah, and Cole, I'm going to get to you too as well. I know you're kind of on the same page as I am with Dak. One of the most impressive things that I saw with Dak being at the game, going back and watching the game, was his pocket mobility, his movements in the pocket to avoid taking sacks, to give himself an extra second or two to make some throws that aren't necessarily easy throws. I wasn't a fan of the route concepts. You know, we've talked about that throughout the year. You know, it was a lot of stop routes, a lot of coming back to the football. But he made a couple throws, and a few of them weren't even completed. But he had some pressure in his face from Jerron Reed, Frank Clark. He was able to just slide to his left, move up a little bit, and throw from the far hash across the field to Amari Cooper. And I think another one might have been to Cole Beasley that were comeback routes. So, you know, pretty 12, 14-yard deep comeback routes where a guy comes up, curls back to the sideline. He was on the far hash a few times with pressure coming on him, and he was able to step further away from that target, step up in the pocket, and deliver the ball. You know, and like I said, I think he completed two of them, and two of them were incomplete or something like that. I'm not sure the exact percentage I have, but just to see the, you know, the development there, because there were so many times in the middle to even, you know, possibly the end of the year where when that pressure was coming, he was trying to either spin out or he'd walk back. He never really slid and stepped up. And I saw that on multiple throws over the weekend, and it really did, you know, it really did not necessarily surprise me, but it made me feel a little bit better about this, you know, run that they could possibly make if he's able to deal with pressure like that. Cole, real quick, you know, before we break, we're right coming up on the break, so give a little bit of insight on what you saw at Dak and his performance in the wild card game, and then we're going to break, come back, and talk a little bit more about the Cowboys' victory over the Seahawks.
Yeah, like you said, I'm kind of on the same page as you as far as I do think Dak can be a successful NFL quarterback. Well, he is a successful NFL quarterback. I'm not sure what his ceiling is, but he's a guy that can win you football games. I've been following Dak Prescott for years. Obviously, I go to Mississippi State, so I've followed his career back to his college days, and the guy just knows how to win. He's not the most accurate passer. He's not the guy he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to throw for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns, but he's a guy that can make key plays and key moments, and that's with this team, that's what you want. He's a guy that, as we saw on Saturday night, and against Aaron Rodgers back in the playoffs, he can go toe-to-toe with some of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL in the playoffs back in 2016 and then Saturday night. And then he can make winning – like, I like how he responded after the interception, which was – I mean, it wasn't a great throw. You can argue pass interference, if he should have thrown to Noah Brown, all that. But I like how he responded instead of – just getting mental mistakes and getting down on himself. He came back and responded. He had that 3rd and 14 run that pretty much sealed the game. I mean, that's one of the defining plays of his career. Earlier in the game, he had the QB power that he was an inch or two short of the goal line that really got the whole stadium fired up. I mean, he's a guy that he's going to miss some throws here and there, but he's also going to make some plays, and he's going to put you in position to win more often than not. And for a team that has a good defense, has Ezekiel Elliott, has some weapons, that's what you want going into the playoffs, going into Los Angeles. And I think he can make the plays necessary to keep this run alive.
Sounds good. All right, look, we're going to take our first break, come back. I do want to go over the injury report that came out today for the playoff game coming up this weekend in LA. So we're going to talk about that briefly. Run through that. We're not necessarily going to spend a lot of time on it because we're going to have a podcast coming out later in the week previewing that game with a more in-depth injury report. We'll kind of get a better feeling for some of these guys. So we're going to break, come back, read off the injury report for today, and then talk more about the Cowboys' win over the Seattle Seahawks in Wild Card Weekend. We'll be right back after our first break. And we're back on the Talking the Star podcast. Make sure you're following the podcast on Twitter at Talking the Star. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at Connor NFL Draft, Dalton on Twitter at Dalton B. Miller, and Cole on Twitter at Cole L. Patterson. Make sure you're following Blogging the Boys on Twitter at Blogging the Boys. Want to give a big shout out to Blogging the Boys, to all the other podcasts that do host podcasts on Blogging the Boys, Bruising the Boys, Ocho Live, 750. Those guys are doing wonderful work as well. Make sure you're tuning into those. Also want to give a big shout out to SB Nation and Vox Media for putting this podcast out, producing it, giving us a platform to talk on. It's great. It's been a great year, and we're hoping it does not end on Saturday. Even though we will be back, it'll just be once a week from then. So let's get into this injury report. I don't know if you guys saw it today. It just came out not too long ago. So we'll just gonna, I'm just going to run through it, and then we'll kind of highlight what we're a little worried about and what we want to just give it a break on, wait till later in the week. Tavon Austin practiced in limited fashion today. Cole Beasley, DNP with an ankle. Noah Brown, DNP with an illness. Malik Collins, DNP with an ankle slash illness. Tyrone Crawford, limited with a neck. Jeff Heath, full with a wrist. David Irving, DNP with an ankle. Blake Jarwin, DNP with an ankle. Sean Lee, full with a hamstring. Zach Martin, limited with a knee. Dak Prescott, full with a knee. Tyron Smith, limited with neck. Xavier Suafilo, limited with ankle. And Darian Thompson, limited with groin. I know that was a long list. Anyone stick out in particular that, you know, made you raise your eyebrows and get a little concerned about?
Blake Jarwin. Got to be healthy. Got to have a good tight end weapon for Dak Prescott coming up this week.
He did finish the game, though, right?
I felt like he did.
I did, too. I remember him coming off the field, like, limping a little bit, but I feel like I saw him come back on the field, so... But that one, I totally agree. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just trying to figure out when I saw that one too. I was like, I feel like he came back in and played, but
no, you're good because he was not, you know, successful or you know anything like that. But no, I mean the big one for me is Cole Beasley. Obviously, want the dude on the field in the slot just because you know he's a third down weapon. Who can get open and be an outlet. And then obviously David Irving. I'm just still waiting for him to be back from that ankle injury. I keep hearing things about when is David Irving going to be back. It's going to be soon. It'll be all right.
I hope so. And there were some whispers coming out last week that, you know, he's back in the building and hopefully going to be able to play the next week if they won against Seattle, and they did. And that's going to be one to keep an eye on because we've seen how Jared Goff can perform when he is put under heavy duress. It hasn't been good. You know, he's looked like a completely different human being. So getting a guy like David Irving that hopefully is in shape, hopefully can affect the quarterback would be huge. One that I'm a little bit concerned about is Malik Collins just because of how well he played on Saturday against Seattle. You know, he had a sack. He had a couple other big tackles. I think he had a tackle for loss as well. But he also was just living in the backfield. One time he bit on the play action and blew up Chris Carson in the backfield. And Russell still had the ball, obviously. But it was just like, gosh, he's getting in the backfield so well. And he's a DNP with an ankle and an illness. He's a tough guy, man. He's played through injuries. He doesn't miss a ton of games. I hope that he'll be ready by the end of the week and be able to play because, like I said, if you get as much pressure as you can get on Jared Goff, your chances of winning that football game go up a lot. If you give him time to sit back there, you give these receivers time off of play action to get downfield, Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, Gerald Everett, those guys will kill you. If you give him time to sit in the pocket, scan the field off of play action, they will destroy you. But if you can pressure him, he will turn the ball over, he will throw inaccurate footballs, he will take sacks, he'll throw the ball away. So that's one I'm looking at is Malik Collins. Dalton, anything? I mean, Cole, anything for you that you're a little concerned about coming out of the injury report?
Yeah, y'all kind of touched on a lot of it, how I'm feeling, Beasley, Malik Collins, Blake Jarwin, and obviously you like to see them play on Saturday night. And man, David Irving would be a huge boost if there was a chance he could play. So that would be something to monitor. But I think you also have to look at Tavon Austin and Suafilo. Tavon Austin, you can see how dynamic he can be. He returned that first punt return for a touchdown. It was obviously called back, and then he had another punt return that put the team in great field position. He's a guy that can make big plays. He might not be the most consistent player, but he has a talent to make a game-changing play. So if he can give it a go, especially if Beasley's still banged up and everything, you would like to have a slot receiver for Dak to get the ball to. And Suafilo, Connor Williams played great on Saturday against the Seahawks. Maybe his best game of the year. He came up big and So if he has to play, I am confident that he can do that. But you would like to see Sofilu healthy, maybe get out there against a front that includes the likes of Aaron Donald and into some big interior tackles. If he can give it a go, I think that makes the offensive line that much better. So I think those are two more to keep an eye on.
I don't think you can underestimate how important Tavon Austin's role in that game was.
Exactly.
What I like to see, and I know, Dalton, you talked about a little bit earlier about how you're kind of frustrated with the play calling. You know, it's a weekly thing with all of us. But I did like that they did use that jet motion a lot early with Tavon. They used it with Amari a little bit, and it seemed to work well. But just, you know, jet sweep that they didn't, you know, wasn't very successful, but the punt returns are just invaluable. You know, we've seen how boring and not effective Cole Beasley has been as a punt returner this year for the Cowboys, and then you get a guy like Tavon in there who breaks off, you know, a huge punt return later in the game. He breaks off the one for a touchdown that was called back on a pretty bogus. They called it holding, which I just don't understand how you call that holding. If anything, it wasn't a block in the back either, but I could understand why they would call blocking the back instead of holding. But then he had another one that went for, you know, it was like 14 yards or something. That doesn't seem like a lot, but that 14 yards goes a long way, especially with an offense that has its struggles. It doesn't move the ball necessarily well for all four quarters. Just having him back there, just every time the ball's punted, you kind of feel like, okay, we're going to get something out of this, where we haven't been able to say that for a while. Dalton, kind of, I wanted you to talk a bit. You know, me and Cole both touched on Tavon. How much of an impact does he bring to a playoff-style game, especially going, you know, next week he's going up against the team that traded him, that he's kind of got a little bit of bad blood with. How big of an impact can he make in these games coming up?
When you can make every time you touch the ball is possibly 6 points, it's a weapon. It doesn't matter if he gets two touches a game or he gets 15 or 20. When he is on the field, the defense has to account for him. He's that fast. He's that good laterally. And that makes a difference in the way that the defense reacts and works. He's made plays as a receiver. He did it in the preseason. He did it up until he got injured. And then obviously returning the football, he had two big ones last week. I mean, one should have been returned for a touchdown. He tripped. The other one was returned for a touchdown and was called back. The dude is electric, and when he's healthy, if he can be healthy, he can make a difference. I mean, points-wise, he can make a difference. So I think it's huge for him to get healthy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, just like I said, ever since the one he housed that they called back, every time the ball was punted, everyone kind of got on their feet and was like, all right, he's going to do it again, and he almost did. That electricity that you see in him when he touches the football, just like I said, it can't be underestimated. Let's get into the rest of this game. We got a few more minutes before we take our final break. The last few minutes that we spend after our final break, I wanted to talk about the running game for both teams and kind of how, you know, Dalton kind of previewed it earlier, but he talked about one team was able to run the football and one wasn't. I did want to talk about that and just talk a little bit about how dominant the Cowboys run defense of was and how dominant Ezekiel Elliott was in that game. So before we do that, trying to stay away from the running games, let's talk about this Cowboys defense. And again, I know that a big part of their defense success was stopping the run, but they played well in all three levels in both phases of the Seattle offense, stopping the pass and stopping the run. They had a few busted coverages, but for the most part, they were able to get off the field on third down. They were able to cover well, minus the two or three big plays they had. Other than that, is there anything that you guys liked or didn't like that you saw from the defense? Like I said, trying to stay away from that run game because we're going to spend the last few minutes talking about that. I'll start it with Dalton. What did you see from the defense that you liked, and what did you see from the defense that maybe you didn't like or that you concerned you a little bit? You got to unmute your microphone first.
I was thinking. Definitely didn't have my microphone muted. Still thinking. Cheeto, man. Like, just get your head around.
I was going to ask, was that a good thing? Because he played well, but he had a few plays he didn't get his head around. So what do you where were you putting that? Was it is a positive or a negative?
Well, the play that he was able to make without getting his head around to track the ball through with the eyes of the receiver and you know shoot his hands up through there was nice to watch. I like that, and especially because that came in a push off. They definitely tried to attack him on multiple occasions. I know Doug Baldwin pushed off on him once as well on a fade into the red zone that I believe was thrown out of bounds, but. My biggest issue was at the end of the game with what happened on that throw down the left side behind Byron Jones. Because, like I said, I haven't seen the all 22 yet, so I don't know what kind of coverage they were in.
It was zone, and he just didn't drop deep enough.
What zone was it?
I haven't watched the play either, but they talked about. I watched it on the broadcast view, and you could tell he didn't because they showed the replay. And you could tell when they zoned in on the receiver that Byron didn't drop deep enough. But it looked like the Brian brought us from DallasCowboys.com said today that they were playing that robber, cover one robber with Jeff Heath as the down in the box being that robber. So Woods was up top, and I guess he was supposed to cover the deeper route, and Byron was supposed to drop deeper. But it looked like Byron had kind of stayed. He was expecting the underneath route and kind of bit down on it. Russell did a little head fake, pump fake, whatever you want to call it, and then hit him, and he was just wide open. But yeah, they said it on. I haven't seen the all 22 yet either. I was at the airport all day yesterday, so I'll have to open that up when we're done. But it's Brian said that it was a cover one robber with Jeff Heath playing down and Xavier Woods playing up or playing back and Jeff Heath playing down, and then it was zone. And Byron Jones just didn't seem to carry that route up the field deep enough.
All right. Sounds good. I mean, other than that, Antoine Woods is a freak.
I love him so much. Not even because he's a friend. Man.
I mean, just give him his money. Just give him some money. Whatever. Not whatever he wants. I love you, Antoine, but you ain't getting it all. But secure him, because you've got a good one. It's quite obvious at this point that he can be straight up, flat out dominant at times. He controlled the center of that offensive line all night with double teams. He was able to anchor. They weren't able to get a push on him. And when you're able to account for two players on the offensive line at once, you're going to be successful in stopping the run. That is the biggest part of a nose tackle or a one technique game, is being able to account for two players in the double team. And that's what he does. Plus he plays with a little bit of giddy up.
Yeah.
He's
not Nick Hayden. You know, we saw him for years kind of just eat up, stand there in the middle of the line, and he gets in the backfield quite a bit, he's not going to be a big sack guy because he's not, super, super explosive, but with his strength and with that little bit of explosiveness that he has, he's able to get in the backfield of the pocket a lot and, maybe flush somebody out or whatever, but he does, he's got that surprising little bit of oomph like you were talking about. But Cole, what do you got on defense that really stood out to you in either a positive or a negative way?
Yeah. Don kind of touched on what I was going to say as far as both Cheeto and Antoine Woods. You would like to see Cheeto make some plays by turning his head, because I feel like he's usually in pretty good position, but he doesn't turn his head fast enough or he doesn't locate the ball. So if he could just do that, that's two or three more plays a game that he can potentially make. And Antoine Woods, obviously a friend of the show, he's been a big plays his role perfectly, and he's a guy that you would like to see continue trending upwards in this playoff run. Another guy I like, is obviously Jalen Smith, I kind of touched on hit the on the first drive where he kind of spied Russell Wilson, deflected the ball and everything. Between him and Leighton Vander Esch, the Cowboys have so much speed at the linebacker position. And with the matchup last year against the Rams, you couldn't really say that. Jalen Smith was obviously still recovering from his injury, and obviously Leighton Vander Esch is still at Boise State. So the Rams were able to exploit that a little bit. So I just like how Jalen Smith's speed just makes his defense a whole lot better and really more fun to watch, to be frank. There was a lot to like, obviously, so we'll talk about the run defense later, but as long as they can shore up the big plays, I guess some of that might be because, you know, I mean, mentally, they probably thought the game was over, whether they're that was right or wrong. They gave it that big play to Russell Wilson. Some of that's because Russell Wilson's just good. I mean, he's a guy that can make those kind of throws. He's like on that fourth down play, on that play down the sideline to Lockett and Baldwin. They're both really good throws, and so I was really impressed. And I think it's kind of like what Dalton was touched on earlier in the show. Playoff football is different. I think that suits the Cowboys well based on how good this defense is.
Agree with everything you guys said. We're going to take our final break, come back, and I want to talk about what I, in my opinion, and I think kind of what we all three of us have talked about, the deciding factor in this game was one team was able to run the ball, one team was not. We're going to spend a few minutes on that before we get out of here. We're talking the Star. We'll be right back after our final break. And we're back on the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesy. You know where to find me on Twitter. You know where to find the podcast on Twitter. You know where to find the co-host on Twitter. We're going to dive right in here. You know, we were talking about some of the things we liked, some of the things maybe we didn't like on the defensive side of the ball. One thing I know for sure that I liked was the run defense and the ability to run the football. And, you know, a lot of people talk nowadays if whether that's important or not. I think it is very important when you can score touchdowns, when you can do it successfully, and they did. Ezekiel Elliott finished the day with 26 carries, 137 yards, and one touchdown, 5.3 yards per carry. You look at the other end of things, Chris Carson only got 13 carries, 20 yards, a yard and a half per carry, zero touchdowns. Rashad Penny also got four carries for 29 yards and 7.2 yards, but one of those was a 22-yard gain, so he had only gotten seven more yards on three other carries. I just, watching that, I mean, that was just complete, utter domination from the Cowboys stopping the run, and the Seahawks didn't really, weren't showing interest in going away from it, and I think that's kind of what lost them the game. And then you could flip it to the other side and say that the Cowboys' ability to run the ball with Zeke, with being able to knock off those six, you know, five, six, 7 yards per carry, and then the two explosive plays he had, and then the explosive plays from Dak, that yards, the scores on the ground, you know, that charged the Cowboys to victory. We got a few minutes to talk about it. Dalton, what was the most impressive thing you had, whether it was the Cowboys' offense running the football or the Cowboys' defense stopping the run? What do you think was the deciding factor in that game?
Ooh, the deciding factor. The deciding factor would be neither, because running isn't important in the NFL. Running backs don't matter. Running the ball does matter, but very little, because when you look at it from an EPA perspective, there's just no comparison between passing and rushing efficiency and the outcome on the game. But if we're talking solely on those two running attacks, the Cowboys and the Seattle Seahawks, I believe that it was more important to stop Chris Carson and that rushing attack, because the Cowboys were going to get theirs. They were always going to get theirs. The Seattle Seahawks defense is not good at stopping the run. They haven't been, you know, all year, really. Ezekiel Elliott was able to have a big game against them the first time around, albeit on, you know, not as many carries as you would normally like to see Ezekiel Elliott get, but you know, stopping Chris Carson is huge. He's been playing fantastic. The last month of the year, he was, I believe, the NFC Player of the Month, right? Like, He had a very good last month. He plays with fantastic balance. He's tough to bring down. Those long arms and athleticism on the Cowboys defense was just able to account for it. That offensive line wasn't able to really do much. DeMarcus Lawrence is a freaking tank, pun intended. Late. I didn't intend it at first, but I figured out who I was talking about. My brain's not working, so that's fun. So I'm just going to, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to pass this off to Cole because I can't think.
Cole, do you agree with him? Was the more important to stop the Seattle's running game, or was it more important for the Cowboys running game to have success and also score some touchdowns on the ground?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of glad we're talking about this because I'm actually writing an article for Blocking the Boys talking about how the trenches will be important this weekend as well. I agree that stopping the run for Seattle was key because everything goes off the run in their offense as far as they like to, I guess, since entering the league, or entering the game, I should say, they're leading the league in rushing with Chris Carson and their staple backs and Russell Wilson. They proved that they can run the football. So I think the Cowboys came in knowing that they had to stop that, and if they couldn't, Russell Wilson was going to pick them apart and play action. They were going to build the rest of their offense based on how successful they were on the ground, and they really never were able to get any traction. The Cowboys were in the backfield. They dominated the line of scrimmage. Malik Collins had a big game. Antoine Woods. Everybody was involved, and it was really good to see them dominate like that. I believe Chris Carson averaged less than 2 yards per carry. It was just complete domination from that standpoint. And you could tell it had an effect on the Seahawks offense as they could not get into rhythm for an entire four quarters, aside from a couple big completions. So I think that I do agree with Dalton that establishing that run defense and making sure that Seattle cannot get anything going on the ground was much bigger than Dallas getting things on the ground, because at the end of the day, Zeke's going to eat.
All right. I agree with you guys, but I'm kind of got to give the other side of the argument just because I think it does have an argument. Obviously, when you look at it, the Cowboys have struggled in the red zone this entire year. It's been one of their Achilles heels, you could say. They were able to score 2 touchdowns on the ground. I'm not saying you take those touchdowns away from the, because there's likely a way that they throw another one if they didn't run it or whatever, but the ability to score those touchdowns on the ground makes me feel a little bit better about the Cowboys running game, because I was starting to kind of gain the attitude that, and I've kind of had it the whole season, that Dalton said earlier, that, you know, running the ball doesn't really matter in today's NFL. Like, teams will let you run the ball, but if you can't score, and that was Ezekiel Elliott's big thing this year due to multiple different, you know, reasons, it doesn't matter. You know, controlling the clock doesn't matter if you're kicking field goals and not punching it in. And this time they were able to punch it in. It wasn't always perfect, but their just ability to carry the ball, 26 times for Ezekiel Elliott for the 137 yards and get that score, that makes running the ball that many times worth it. And then when you add in Dak's 6 carries for 29 yards and his rushing touchdown, I feel like that also makes it worth it as well. I want to go back to, you know, the 3rd and 14th run from Dak, the run right before half for Ezekiel Elliott. They had the other run from Dak that was a big gain. They had so many runs in this game, and they had some passes too, some to Amari Cooper, the touchdown to Michael Gallup we can talk about as well. But I thought their runs came up big in certain times they needed to have a big play, that it kind of limited the need to make a big play through the air. So it kind of released some of that pressure from an offense that might have struggled to make those big plays throughout the year. And again, I'm probably leaning more towards agreeing with you guys, but I do think there's a little bit of an argument to say that the Cowboys running attack, you know, the ability to maintain success, to score on the ground, the big plays that come from running the football, were able to power this team to victory. But we'll be able to talk more about that next week. This week. We're going to be coming back with a podcast on Friday to preview the Rams game that is this Saturday over in L.A. The boys travel to L.A. to take on the Rams in the NFC divisional playoff game. Try to further this thing and hopefully finish this fight We're Talking the Star. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, and we'll see you guys next time.
Hello, I'm Ashley Carmen.
I'm Caitlin Tiffany.
We're the hosts of Why'd You Push That Button, the Verge's show about all the choices technology forces us to make.
And we're back for season 3, talking about questions like, why do you delete your tweets?
And why do you type in lowercase letters that make you seem like a serial killer?
And why are you on an exclusive dating app?
You're not that special. We're releasing a new episode every Wednesday, and you can find us anywhere you typically find podcasts, which is Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts. So go ahead and subscribe and check us out.